Everybody jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip hop, the hip it, the hip hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap, rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. That means it's the end of the week here on the Pensacola Morning News, and we have a couple of friends here in studio to talk about the news from the week. In this case, Josh Newby, who is the executive director. I always forget.
Yeah, executive director.
President, CEO, and executive director are all synonyms to me.
Yeah.
So,
and definitely the most, the most notable person in the room, I'll say.
No, I've just left it right there. I've left it for you to live in it.
Okay, thank you.
Council on Aging in West Florida. Oh, but how did Senior Chillout turn out?
It was great. We've distributed to 400 seniors. When it's all said and done, we'll have distributed to about 650.
Great. Outstanding. Yep. I was out there last week with you and talking
right
about that. The other person in the room that he was throwing shade at and having fun with is a former mayor of Pensacola who now works at Pensacola State College, Grover Robinson.
Glad to be here, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, tell me again what you do at PSC.
I'm in charge of government community relations.
Okay, which if only you knew something about government, then I could see how that role would fit for you.
Why'd they hire you?
Former commissioner, former mayor, I think it's sort of a fit. And what, 23rd generation Pensacolian, is that right?
I'm seventh. My children are eighth,
Only seven, he says.
Lord.
Right. So one of the things that's come up this week, we're talking with the mayor about this, and it comes up periodically. You know, somebody had sent me a picture the other morning of the line around the corner at the airport for TSA, and boy, it sucks when you have to wait too long. I will say this, and you know, he's like, well, okay, but you know, 30 other pictures any other day, you know, and any other time, even of that day. But it's true. Like, they had four machines and two went down all of a sudden. They had enough staff, but if you don't have the machines, you can't run the process. So we're working on it. But this is the kind of problem you want, right? You want not too few. Well, you want not mobile, right?
Absolutely. And I think this is the being a victim of your own success. I mean, we certainly saw this when I was mayor and we began this process going forward. The exciting part is this continuing to get funding is moving forward, because this can be a heavy lift. But we said, you know, rather than, you know, we were just talking about before we went into COVID, we were just going to do additional parking spaces. And then we came out of COVID and we were like, no, we need to do a whole new, we need more places, more gates, more everything. We need to do the whole thing. And we made that move, and it's good to see it continuing and progressing. The unfortunate part is you have to live in what is there. And I mean, I was very clear to people, it's going to take years down the road for us to get there. We are going to get there. But it is going to be a little painful as we go through it. But I'd much rather have that problem than, you know, things just crickets at the airport. I mean, that's a whole different part. It is not – the airport is unbelievable, the volume that it is doing.
It just
right
keeps
now
breaking records all the time. And, you know, you see it in the experience of it, which, as you say, is a good thing. But you were telling me off the air, we're talking a little bit about this, that getting airport, like at the terminal, which we got funding, that came through, right? That came through from the governor. Something, a lot of things got cut, but that came through. And that process is kind of like building a new school. Like, you've got to be suffering for a while with overcapacity before they'll even consider letting you build a new school.
Yeah, because you go through a process, you're going to require not only the state stuff, but you're going to require FAA. And they tend to not, you know, they always say, well, you're not planning far enough. I always like, whether it's the traffic or something like the airport, the local government has doing that. But generally, the places that they're going to need either their approval from or their funding from at the state or federal will not do it until you're absolutely busting at the seams. And then they come in and they tell you, yes, we'll now give you permission. We'll give you funding. Again, City of Pensacola for a long time has been saying we need to get another terminal. So again, it's a process where it unfortunately it takes so long because they won't give it to you right away. When you first say, I see the problem, they give it to you after it's kind of painful for a while.
Why is government funding that way? I've always noticed this difference, because some things the government will fund very proactively. I think about the military, whereas some things like civic infrastructure, they, like you said, they wait until the problem is so bad. Why?
Well, I would just, one part I disagree with is I would say in the military, we fund highly, but we don't necessarily fund wisely. And for example, shipbuilding capacity.
Yeah.
We have waited until we are now in a crisis versus China in shipbuilding capacity.
That's where we are in airports, too.
And that's where we are now. Right. So I don't know that the military has been done well,
okay.
as opposed to, it seems to be an across the board government problem.
That's fair.
I think it's just the case of there's only so much money, and it's hard to justify all the places that it goes, it can go to. So it kind of ends up working. I mean, that was sort of the thing we talked about before coming in here, some of the things that happened through the process of the veto. Mm-hmm. it's just sometimes these things happen. You want to get everything. Every area of Florida is growing, so everybody needs funding. The problem is, and I think in some ways it's wisely, the state of Florida just isn't out spending crazy. They're thinking about what happens, but it does.
I mean, $1 billion here and $1 billion there adds up,
but
eventually.
The state,
right?
It does. But Grover, the state has a healthy surplus. And
but that won't
persist, years.
Right? The federal money that made some of that possible, that's not going to persist quite the same way.
I mean,
and the needs are enormous.
Their savings are less than they were a year or two ago, but it's still a very healthy savings account.
They have money. What I would argue in my position is the best way to continue to make sure that you see progress and more money coming into the future is the best way is investment in education.
Right.
So we would say that for what we do at the college and certainly the university and regular education system. So now is the time you should be investing in those. But I get it. I understand there, you know, it can't go all the way around. I mean, it is unfortunate in some ways. It does seem like we could be better. But, you know, there are a lot of airports that need stuff. We definitely need it. It's kind of one of those things that turns around. It comes around. It even comes around here. I mean, people talk about different park infrastructure the city of Pensacola has had. I mean,
right.
People would complain, but I said, hey, while I was there, we took care of, we got a whole new pool over mm-hmm. there underneath the interstate.
110.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hunter Pool.
We did mm-hmm. exactly the Hunter Pool. We did all the stuff that over on we did all the things at McGee Field. We did all, you know, just going through a list of
the needs
you
are
can't
large,
get everywhere.
Many, yeah.
You can't get everywhere, and it tends to be you kind of move, you hit this one, and then you move on to the next one that's most critical, even though they all may need it. We hit Gull Point, we did stuff there, and again, not everybody uses it, but the people who do use it in the neighborhood, it is in the city, it is wherever these things are, they are utilized, and it just takes time when you're that big to go through the whole process. Now, I'm not going to disagree with you. I wish in some ways that they would spend a little bit more on the surplus, because
right.
I would argue investing in education is probably the best thing you can do.
Well, PSC missed out on a major workforce development
right,
building.
Right.
That
I mean,
was $10 or $12 million, dollars,
it was
right?
$13 million. Yeah. I mean,
and UWF missed out on a big one, too.
A ton.
Yeah, and the engineering stuff would have been great, and that would have been – those are things we definitely need in this area. So it's unfortunate. I wish we could have gotten all those. I mean – there's no doubt we were very lucky through the legislative process. We probably never would have gotten there without having Senator Broxson where he was.
I totally agree.
But I think the governor kind of moved through to be a leveler across the state, and mm-hmm. I think that's why we didn't see – it wasn't as great a day as we got through the legislature. He sort of leveled things out across there. You know,
it was woo-hoo at the end of session, and it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe more like cool.
But I said that to you
a
coming
wilt
in.
At the end.
I said that to you. It's hard. We're so much prisoners of the moment
yeah,
of where we are.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, our priority ask was the insurance that we could be in there. The governor approved that. He approved the money that we were going to do the implementation. He vetoed the money that was in this year's budget. So it means we wait 6 months more than we expected, 12 months more than we expected. We don't like it, but at the end of the day, the things we really wanted passed through. At the end
and
of the day,
I do love what you said about, you know, we really did get a lot.
We got a lot.
It's,
yeah.
It's just that we had been, you know, we had been hoping for the even more than a lot,
right,
which didn't quite come through. We got Grover Robinson here in studio, Josh Newby. Josh, I've rarely had the experience of hearing you get drowned out by your fellow participants.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. Well, I'm usually drowned out by you, Andrew.
Yes, you're such a wilting flower.
Yeah.
John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
That's right. If you're on 29, just south of West 9 Mile Road and Pine Forest Road in Detroit, seeing an accident there. Let's see. It's blocking your way to get it on I-10 westbound, so just be aware of that. Other than that, I-10, I-110 flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the election, because I will say it this way. the way Florida does qualifying primaries and general elections is, what's the word I want? Insane. It's terrible.
Right.
The most terrible is the idea that these shadow ghost candidates can file, qualify, spend the money, what, $500,000, whatever it is, and close off a big slice of the electorate from being able to participate in a primary. Let's pick a couple of examples. Commissioner for District 1. Okay. Well, actually, I want to come to that one next. Commissioner for District 5. We've got Stephen Barry is qualified, of course, for re-election. And now we have Rafael Lopez, a no party. Sorry, not him. Joshua Robertson, no party affiliate. So we're going to have a general election. We have a contest. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about that person. I hope he's a sincere candidate, but I don't know whether that's the case or not. And you always have to ask because it's really hard to tell. In District 3, unless something really changes, if John Johnson qualifies, then it'll be him versus Lumen May. Otherwise, Lumen's going to get reelected, you know, without any opposition. Mm-hmm. In District 1, things are super weird this year. So we had Steve Stroberger, who had been the chief of staff for Mike Kohler, and then he resigned that position to run because of the Jonathan Owens rule, where he had previously been the chief of staff for Doug Underhill, and then he ran against Jeff Bergosh, and they made a rule that if you run against a county commissioner, you have to resign your seat, your employment. So he had resigned, and he started running. Just yesterday, Jesse Casey, who had run against Jeff in the past and had run against Jeff and Jonathan in the past and had been working as Jeff's chief of staff, has now resigned. Well, he's not resigned. He's on long-term leave, which is allowed, and he's filed to run. And you have a guy named Tyler Alger, who nobody has any idea who this person is. At least I don't. Nobody I've talked to does. But he is a qualified write-in, and what that means is you had a primary that would have been open. Everybody could have voted in the primary, voted for Bergosh or Stroberger, anybody living in District 1. Then Tyler joined, and so now only Republicans vote in the primary, which is the only election that matters in District 1. Whoever wins that wins the overall. Now that Jesse's in, you don't even have to win the majority of the primary. You just have to win a plurality, which is what Jeff has won the last couple of times. And, I mean, it could be that Jesse really thinks he's got a chance. But come on, he's been working as the employee of Jeff Bergosh all this time. Nobody really believes that. You know, this system is terrible.
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges are the plurality system. I will say this. I've run in that system, and I've run in what the city does. And what the city does, however you feel about one way or the other, everybody votes, and you have to get 50%. Mm-hmm. And it really changes the dynamics of how you run and what you have to do. It's so much of a different election than the rest of them are.
Mm-hmm.
It is probably a more truer sense of
you actually represent a majority of the electorate.
Correct.
Yeah. Like
correct.
D.C., if he had not won a majority when he was running with four people, he would have had to win again in the general election. He got more than 50%.
I got a plurality the first time, but still had to go into the next round.
Is that a charter difference?
Correct.
It is a charter difference.
The other reason it happens is it's no party affiliate. You do not run as a Republican or
so you don't have party primaries in the city.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, it's anti-democratic. It benefits
in both
those
senses.
Yes. Yes, yes,
senses.
That's right.
Oh, but I mean, same problem in District 3. Like when Lumen ran against his brother last time around. Right. I'm a Republican. I didn't get to vote in the primary. And by the general, there was one person.
I think that's different because I think Lumen won like 92%. So there's a clear
of the Democrats.
But he is.
Well,
saying,
that's a Democrat. Well, but
that's a much more even district than you think.
You can't go back and forth. You got to be fair.
You're right.
It's
undemocratic in both senses. You were going to say.
Yeah. But I just it helps those in power. I don't understand how we got here. I guess I know how we got here. The cynical part of me knows how we got here. But Jeff Bergosh knows that he's deeply unpopular in his district. He knows this is the only way to win, to game the system. But unfortunately, there's nothing. I mean, I'm not a District 1 resident, but there's nothing the people can do to really have a representative voice on the commission.
And also, I mean, look, maybe he runs against Stephen Stroberger and wins heads up.
Sure.
You never know
him
until you run the election.
Good
maybe he
him.
Knocks more doors. Maybe people don't like Stephen. Who knows?
Right.
But when you run a one-on-one or when you run, you have to get a majority, then at least you have a result that you know.
Right.
But instead, what you're going to have here, most likely, let's imagine that Jeff gets reelected. Commissioner Bergosh gets reelected. He gets, let's say, 40% of the vote. You'll never know whether the other 60 would have been happier with an other person or whether they split their opposition among the two candidates. That's the problem.
Now, the only thing I will say is, and I have no idea anything that's happened. I hear what y'all saying on the District 1. I'm not involved in it one way or the other. The only thing I will say is you got to be mad at the rules, because if you play within the rules and you make things happen, then those are the rules. And
But the manipulation of the rules by some candidates to get their friend to put up $1,000 to file for a seat so that the Democrats can't vote in the election because it's a primary, that kind of stuff drives me insane.
It may drive you insane, but it is the rule that
is
the problem.
I agree, it's the rule.
But that speaks to a character flaw then, that they're willing to exploit the rule in order to stay in power.
I will tell you this. I was actually really impressed that this hadn't happened in District 1 yet. I was like, oh, we're going to have Jeff and Steven. It's a heads-up match. Cool.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, I'm like, people. Yeah. The other one that's kind of interesting is kind of a last-minute change is that your subsequent commissioner, when you moved to be the mayor and Robert Bender ran for District 4, he then got moved into the seat vacated by David Stafford to be the supervisor of elections. And that looked like it would be an uncontested race, except for, you had Carrie Young was running, but she didn't qualify. And so now you have he is running, but there's been opposition filed against him because now Pam Childers' husband, right, is running in that same seat all of a sudden this week. So that makes that a very interesting one. So we have Bruce Childers versus Robert Bender in a Republican primary in which right now would be the election.
So it'd be open to everybody.
Yeah, and it'd be an open primary. We have another one of those ECOA District 1 right now. It's two Republicans running against each other in an open primary, which that's interesting. You know, we don't have that all that often, but it's at least open. Everybody gets to vote in that. But how many people turn out for the primary election?
Right. And I mean, supervisor of election, how many people? It's an incredibly important position, of course, but how many people are really paying attention to that? It's just, Escambia County politics is so messy. Pam Childers' husband running against Robert Bender.
Absolutely.
Who she previously had beef with. I mean, it just makes me feel dirty.
Well, and to take the whole story one part further, okay, yesterday Chris Jones announced that he's not running for re-election as property appraiser. Says it's family stuff. And, you know, I've talked to somebody who says that he was really trying to qualify and he really was not sure, like it was up to the last moment. But the cynical observer sees Chris drops out the day before qualifying ends. His subordinate, Bubba, who works for him, is now going to run and is almost certainly going to win without opposition. You see that, and you, even if you know Chris and don't believe they did it for the wrong reasons, even if you believe this is all done on the up and up for no scheme at all, you still think, shouldn't we have longer to decide? Shouldn't people have a chance to consider whether they run so we can actually have an election?
Is that a partisan seat? I know Chris is a Democrat.
It is a partisan seat, okay, but he's a Democrat. Right. And yeah, so
I will say, though, from Chris's perspective, I did write him a check, so I hope he's writing it back to me. But he did call me and say that. I've always respected Chris.
I do, too. He's very good at answering questions. He's always available. He's a good guy, right. No problem.
From my perspective, it seemed like he was definitely looking to run, and that's what he wanted to do. I mean, that's what he told me a while back that he was looking to do.
I just think we have so many things we actually do wrong that it'd be great if we took the opportunities to avoid the appearance of impropriety in cases where we're actually doing it right. And we haven't done a great job of that.
Well, here becomes the problem.
Hang on. Hold a thought for just a second. John Pickens got traffic on the fives.
That's right. If you're traveling southbound on Highway 90 through that construction zone heading to Pensacola, we're seeing some major delays there. Other than that, I-10, I-110 flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Go ahead, Grover.
I mean, to an extent, it's a rule issue that you're always going to have people file here and there right before the end. But the question would become, when you file now, you only have 60 days to get to the finish line versus if you had an earlier qualifying part. I mean, but qualifying is just part of the game. You say that you got to have it one way or the other.
Okay,
let me
do my every once in a while soapbox, okay?
Yeah.
Instant runoff voting or ranked choice voting.
Yes.
So you got five candidates of various parties.
Yes.
Okay? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You go the first round, nobody gets a majority. The number five vote getter goes away. Whoever voted for five gets their next choice. You get to a 51% somewhere and you're done. You don't have to deal with all of this primaries by party. You don't have to deal with this fake ghost candidates closing off access to elections. You actually get the candidates that the people choose by a majority.
I genuinely think, and this is not me being hyperbolic or sarcastic, I genuinely think ranked choice voting is the solution to American democracy.
And yet my party
is
almost universally against it. We just closed off another state. I think it was Maine, where they decided that it was going to be illegal to do ranked choice voting because
insane.
We want the two party. We'd rather have this nonsense than the other thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the way you could get around that, Andrew, is you simply have open primaries. You come to a primary, everybody goes open. Whoever the top two people are, if they don't get 50%,
which would be that's a variant on the ranked choice
voting. Right. I mean, I would take that compromise.
I think that's the other way that you get around it on the open primary simps, and you kind of do it like the city does it,
right?
And then you can
have a designated party affiliation, but you don't have to control who gets to vote for whom.
You know, the funny thing is, in that one, you'd actually have people really philosophically in the idea of am I Republican or Democrat. You'd actually have the chance to see it in a more open way, and
you might genuinely Democrats vote for Republicans and vice versa, which is kind of what you want in a system, is to vote for the person, not only the party. Grover, Josh, thank you so much.
Dependable traffic on the fives weekdays on News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.